On the bottom of Daf Yud Amud Beis, the Gemara quotes a brice on the last line, Tanoihi, and suggests that perhaps the issue of Pchas Nevela is in fact a Machlokas Tanoim in the brice that the Gemara is quoting now. Let's just quickly review. What is Pchas Nevela? It means that if Reuven Shar kills Shimon Shar, then if from the time of the Negicha and the death of the victim, of the Shar victim, the animal, the carcass, goes down in value, that loss in value has to be suffered by either the Mazik or the Nizak. And the question is, who has to deal with that? Who has to suffer the loss of Pchas, the depreciation of the carcass, after the death of the animal that was victimized? And the Gemara wants to suggest now that it's a Machlokas Tanoim, Desanya. First we have the Shita of the Tanakama, quoting the Pasuk, Im Torof Yitrof Yivieu Eid. This is a Pasuk in Shmos, Perek Chaf Beis. And this Pasuk deals with the issue of a Shomer Sachar who accepted upon himself, and he's paid for it, Shmira, on an animal. The animal was attacked and died. And the Torah says, Yivieu Eid, Im Taref Yitaref, Yivieu Eid. And the Chachamim Darshan on this Pasuk, Yavi Eidim Shenitrefa Bionis. A Shomer Sachar is Chayev for Gneva Vaveda, because he's paid for his Shmira, but he's Potter for Onsim. And the burden of proof now is on the shoulders of the Shomer Sachar to prove with evidence, with two witnesses, that the animal was attacked, the animal that he was in charge of as the custodian, and it was mitigating circumstance beyond his control, it was onus, and therefore potter, because a Shomer Sachar, even though he's chayav for Gneva Veda, nevertheless he's potter for onsim. So now we're on the top of Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. We've seen the Shita of the Chachamim. Nothing in the Shita of the Chachamim gives us any clue about Pchas Nevela. There's no relevancy to Pchas Nevela. However, this Brisa now quotes Abba Shaul, who reinterprets this Pasuk. Abba Shaul Omer, Yavi Aduda Lebezdin. Aduda, which is the way he's dashing the word Edim, is the Nevela. Meaning, bring the Nevela into Bezdin and evaluate it. So what's going on? My lav says the Gemara b'Hakam Iflagi. Demar, in this case, Abba Shaul Savar, Pchas Nevela din Nizakavi. From the moment that the animal dies until the process of din, of judgment, comes to its fruition, it's the Nizak, who in this case is the Mafkid, who gave the animal over to the Shomer, he's going to suffer that loss. And therefore, let's say it was a case of Pshia, and the Shomer Sachar did not provide the proper supervision to safeguard the Shar, and as a result the Shar was attacked and was killed, then the Nevela is brought to Bezdin, and the evaluation of the Bezdin of the Nevela is to determine what its value was at the time of the Misa, such that the discrepancy between the animal now as a Nevela and the animal in its lifetime, that subtraction is exactly what the Shomer Sachar will have to pay. And therefore, what we're saying is that Pchas Nevela de Nizakavi, meaning the Nizak, if the Mafkid again, the Nizak, if he wants to collect additional funds, then he's got to make sure that he gets the nevela as soon as possible to the Beis Din to make an evaluation, because from the time of Misan on, any devaluation of the value of the nevela is going to be suffered by the Nizak. So what he wants to do is get that nevela out of there so he can freeze it or ship it out for to market and sell it. Because what Beis Din is going to do is, they are going to evaluate the nevela as it was worth Bashas Misa, and they're going to penalize and obligate the shomer to pay the difference between the value of the live animal and the value of the nevela as it were at the time of the death. And we gave an example in the last shiur, if the animal is sold alive and well at 500, the nevela at the moment of death could be marketed for 100, then the shomer is only going to pay 400. He pays the differential. If the nevela, which is now at the time of Misa been evaluated at 100, now goes down in value, if it depreciates, there's a certain kilkul and sirachon, that's going to be the loss of the nizak, because the nizak is the one who is the owner, the proud owner of this nevela. Now, the Tanna Kamma refuses to use that drasha and to derive iduda being referring to the nevela, sara demazikavi. He's of the opinion, the Tanna Kamma, that the loss by depreciation of the nevela is suffered by the mazik, in this case the shomer. The shomer who was poshea, he's going to suffer the loss of the pchas nevela. And therefore, he's going to pay the 500, the full live market value of this animal. Now, he, meaning the mazik, is stuck with the nevela. He wants to get it out of there as soon as possible and sell it on the market. The Gemara says, lo, the machlokas here is not about pchas nevela. The kuli alma de nizak. Everyone agrees that the mazik, in this case the shomer, pays nothing more than the differential between the live animal and the dead animal. Hacha, what is the machlokas here? B'torach nevelaka miflagi. Who has the responsibility to haul up the nevela from wherever it is? According to Abba Shol, the mazik has to do that service. That's what we're deriving from Yavi Edim, which means Yavi Iduda, you should bring the nevela. The nevela has nothing to do with the evaluation per se, because we're going to find out what the nevela is worth in any event, and the mazik's only to pay the differential. What we're talking about here is the tircha of bringing the nevela. According to Tanna Kamma, that hassle, that amount of work and torach, is incumbent upon the nizak. And that's where Abba Shol says that even though the pchas nevela is the nizak has to suffer that, but nevertheless there's gzeiros hakosuv that it's the mazik who's responsible to be toreach to bring the nevela out of there. And now the Gemara quotes a brisa that supports the opinion of Abba Shol. For Tanya, we learned in a brisa, Achirim Om Minayin Shal Baal Abor Lahalos Shor Miboro. What is the source in the Torah for the obligation incumbent upon the mazik, in this case the owner of the bar, to haul up the dead carcass from the bottom of the bar? Talmud Lomar, the Brice establishes that we derive this halacha from Kesef Yoshiv Lebalov Vehames, meaning the mazik has to not only return money to compensate the nizak for the loss, but also the mess. And he's got to haul up the dead animal from the bottom of the bar. And that might entail hiring Paulim. And if the Nizak actually hires Polim, the Mazik is going to have to reimburse the Nizak for the payment to the Polim. Omale Abayla Rava, Hai Torach Nevelechi Domi. What exactly is the definition of this concept called Torach Nevela? Ilema Dibibera Shavya Zuze. If we're going to say that the Nevela at the bottom of the bar is worth one Zuz, Va'aguda, but on the outside of the bar, after you've hauled it up, Shavya Arba, it goes up in value by four Zuzi. Why do I need a pasuk, says Rava, says Abai to Rava, to impose the obligation on the mazik? Ki tarach b'dinafshi tarach. He himself has to spontaneously be motivated to bring up the nevela from the bottom, because if he doesn't do so, then the nevela is going down in value like the speed of light as a result of the fact that it's on the bottom of the bar. Because since the mazik is going to pay the nizak only the differential between the value of the nevela and the value of the animal marketed chai, as it was alive, then the more that the carcass depreciates and goes down in value, the greater the gap between the value of chai and the value of the nevela. In other words, it's in the mazik's best interest to keep the value of the nevela high. So obviously, he's got to be toreach to bring up this animal, the nevela, from the bottom, so that he pays less. Amale Rava responsa by lotzricha to be bereshav yezuzi agudinami shav yezuzi. It's worth the same amount, this carcass on the bottom of the bar, as it is on the top of the bar. The Gemara says umika kai gavna. What does this really mean? Who wants to hire Polim to bring up the carcass from the bottom? And that's got to express itself in a depreciated market value. It's one of the costs here that has to be taken into consideration. So the Gemara says yes. It could be that the carcass has a market value that doesn't change, no matter where it's located. The Amri Inshi, we have an idiomatic phrase that goes the following: Kishura b'masa b'zuza, Kishura b'davra b'zuza. That if a person has a korah, Kishura is a korah, meaning a beam, and the value of the beam is one zuz. That's b'masa here in the city, where we'll find a market for it. In the sada, out there in the wild, it's going to have the same market value of a zuz. Even though, again, you're going to have to add payment to bring that beam to transport it by Poland back to the city from the sada. That doesn't change the value, the market value. It's, so to speak, all swallowed up in the price. And that's true even today. If you have, let's say, a market in a big metropolis, and people are competing, they're bringing their goods, their merchandise to sell in that market, there are people coming from all over the world, but they cannot jack up the price and compete with the local merchants by saying, well, I need to buffer and add to the price because I brought it all the way from Europe. That's not how it works. Fine. Now we learned the laws of Nezikin, that the Nevela belongs to the Nizak, the Mazik only pays the differential. The Gemara wants to know, does that same rule apply to a Ganav, to a Gazlan, to a Shoel? Omar Shmuel. Shmuel says this was the accepted tradition amongst the judges. Ein shamin lo leganov velo legazlan ela linizakin. When we say lo shamin, what we mean is that if somebody, for example, stole an animal or he stole a utensil, and the animal died, or this utensil broke. So there's obviously a very dramatic depreciation in the value. Then the ganav is going to pay out of pocket the entire sum. We're not going to do a shuma to evaluate the present market value of the broken kli or the carcass of the animal. That's called Ein Shamin Leganov O Legazlan. And basically, the ganav made a kinyan on the object and on the animal, and he owns the shvarim, he owns the nevela. That's his problem. He's got to pay the full price to the nigzal or to the nignav. Ela linizokin, where do we have a din of shuma? That's as far as mazik and nizak. And whatever left after the hezek, that has to be evaluated because the mazik only pays the differential. Vani omer. So in other words, until now Shmuel was saying this is the way it's usually done. My personal opinion, I would make this comment, so to speak, is aflis shoel. That even in the case of shoel, the halach is the same. Now it's unclear, what does it mean the halach is the same? Is it the halach of Ein Shomin like it is by Ganav Gazlan? And we classify shoel in this context as a Ganav Gazlan. Or does he mean it's like Nezikin and there is a Shuma process? The Amamodali. And Rav, who's called Abba by Shmuel, agrees with me. Iboilu, the Gemara, wants to know what exactly did Shmuel mean when he said Aflis Shoel? Is it Hachikomer Aflis Shoel Shomin? Even in the case of Shoel, like in the case of the Zikin, we'll do a Shuma because the Shoel only has to pay the differential. He's also like a Mazik over here. The Abba Modali, and they have Rav agreed to me, O Dilma, perhaps Hachikomer. This is what he meant to say. Vani Omer Aflishol Ein Shomin, meaning that Shoel has the same identical status and din as Ganav and Gazlan. And the Abba Modali, Ein Shomin, there's no Shuma. The Shoel, like the Ganav and Gazlan, has to pay the entire sum, the market value of the object in its original state before it was destroyed. And if you hold Ein Shomin L'Shoel, like the second side, this would be one of the great riyas that a Shoel has kinyonim rights, just like a ganav and a gazlan. It's not a total kinyon, but to some extent it's a kinyon. The Gemara says, Toshma, Tahu Gavra, Dishoil Narga Michavre. There's a person who borrowed an axe from his friend. Tavre, he broke it. It was Pshia. Asalakami Derav. Omale Zil Shlimle Narga Mialya. Pay him the value of this Narga, this Garzen, as it were, pole in perfect shape, and sold on the market. Shma mina, Ein Shomin. This would support the view of the second side in the Gemara Safek, namely, that in the case of Shoel, what Shmuel had in mind was that it has the same din as the din of a Ganav of a Gazlan. There's no Shuma, because, again, if there was Shomin, then Rav shouldn't have said and pay him the value, the full value of the Garzen. Because even though the Garzen, this axe or hatchet, whatever it is, was broken, maybe it could be put together. So the raw materials of the broken pieces have some value. And Rav had no compunctions, no inhibitions about telling the Shoel that he has to pay the full value of the Narga. So Gemara says, Adarab. Maybe we should bring a raya punkfaket to the exact opposite conclusion. Ka'omra le Rav Kahana Ravasi le Rav. Rav Kahana Ravasi turned to Rav with a question. They were amazed. Dina hachi? Is that really the din? Meaning, is it really true that Ein Shomin l'Shoel? Vishasik? Rav said nothing. It sounds like he agreed to the question. Shma mina. Shomin. So the bottom line of this whole sugya is that Shoel has the same identical halacha as Nezikin. And just like in the Zik and the Mazik pays the differential between the dead and alive, the same law applies in the case of Shoel. Now the Gemara brings a machlokes amoroim within the context of Shmuel. Itmar Omar Ula Omar Abelazar Shomin Leganov Ula Gazlon, meaning we accept the halacha of Shmuel with regard to Ganov and Gazlon. Well, actually, I shouldn't say that because Shmuel was only saying that in the case of Shoel, that Ein Shamin. It might be more logical to assume that in the case of Ganav Gazan, Shmuel accepted the Minigat Dayanim. We only found that he made a comment about Shoel. And if that be the case, the din is Ein Shamin Leganav Ula Gazlan. Whereas Ula is saying the name of Rabbi Lazar, Shamin Leganav Ula Gazlan. Meaning that Ganav Gazlan have the same status as Nizak, as Mazik. And therefore the halacha is Ein Shamin. There the halacha is Shamin. Rav Papa Omar, Ein Shamin. Rav Papa says, no, that there is no Shuma for a Ganav or a Gazlan, and we should accept the opinion of Shmuel and the Minig of Dayanim. The Hilchus and the Gemara's final word is Ein Shamin Lo Leganav Velo Legazlan, Avo Leshoel, Shamin, Kidrav Kahana, Virav Asi. So the final psak, the way we see it here in the Sugya, is that the status of a Ganav Gazlan is very similar to the status of a Mazik. And the Ganav Gazlan, insofar as they make a Kinyan, they have to pay the entire value, which means, I'm sorry, I stand corrected, that Ganav Gazlan stand in contrast to Mazik and Nizak, because again, in Mazik and Nizak we said Shomin, which means the Mazik only pays the differential. After all, he doesn't own the animal. And the Nevela is, as it always was, the Nizak's Nevela, even though before it was Chai, now it's a... But Ganav Gazlan, that's already a different story. That's like we saw in Shmuel and the Minigat Dayanim of Ein Shomin, the Ganav Gazlan has to pay the entire sum. Now, oddly enough, Shoel in the Maskaras HaSugya, like we saw implicit in the Kasha of Rav Kahana and Rav Asi, has the status of Mazik V'Nizak, which means Shomin, and the Shoel is not considered a Bailim on the object, so when the object breaks, or when the animal dies, the broken pieces and the Nevela belong to the mafkid or the nizak, and therefore we have to make a shuma to figure out what the market value of those broken pieces or the carcass is, and subtract that from the full fledged healthy object or healthy animal value in the shuk, and pay the differential, because shoel is not considered like Ganav Gazlan. Ganav Gazlan have kinyan igzela a shoel, although he has a kinyan le. L'shimush, l'tashmish, but nevertheless, he doesn't have a full-fledged kinyan, and the halacha of Shuma applies. Now, we just mentioned Ula in the name of Rabbi Elazar, and now the Gemara is going to bring a whole string of halachic statements. The transmission is Ula in the name of Rabbi Elazar. We saw it before that Shamin Leganov Ula Gazlan. And now we're going to talk about the laws of a Yoledes. So let's just point out that in the parasha in Vayikra Yud Beis, the Torah tells us that a Yoledes has Yemei Tuma and Yemei Tara. So for example, if let's say she gave birth to a girl, she counts 14 days of Tuma, and then 66 days of Tara. So during this 14-day period, she's not allowed to have relations with her husband. And if she comes in contact with any taros through Nagia, she's metami them. After we pass these 14 days, she counts 66 days of tara. And if she sees dam during those 66 days, she remains tahora. However, all these numbers are true for the case of a female baby, but if it's a male child that's born, then we have 7 days of tumah and 33 days of tara. Now, we also want to give a little bit of an introduction to the laws of a nafel, which means if a woman has an embryo, a fetus in her body, that fetus is considered a being, a live, viable being, if its krum, which is called shilya, is created. In other words, let's say a woman has a miscarriage, if the vlad already has some sort of a tsura, it looks like the tissues and the organs have begun to form, again, appropriate for that level, or that much time that passed since conception, that's already considered a viable being called a nafel, and we'll see the implications. However, if the embryo dies, and it's what's called the moach inside the shilya, it's completely mishkababbled, it has no tsura whatsoever. So if a woman had such a miscarriage, Rachmana Litzlan, then the shilya itself might be considered like a leda. And when she gave birth to this placenta that's surrounding the embryo, that placenta might be recognized as a leda, which means it engenders tumas leda and yemei tohar. But of course, we cannot know if the vlad is male or female at that stage. It's way too early. Is then she has to count lechumra, thinking that maybe she was going to give birth to an akeva, a full 2 weeks of tumah. On the other hand, the kula of Yemei Tara, here what we're going to have to do is cut it down, lechumra, to the smaller number, which is Yemei Tara for a zachar, for the birth of a male child, which is 33 days. So what's going to happen is that in this case where she had a pola, she had a miss, and there's a shilya, we're going to have to take the chumras on both sides. We're going to have to assume on the one hand a nekeva, and therefore 2 weeks of tumah. On the other hand, we're going to have to whittle down the yemei tara as if she had given birth to a zachar, which only leads up to 33 days. Now, that 33-day period normally includes the 7 days of tumah. Here we have 14 days of tumah. So we're going to have to subtract the 14 from the number 40, and if my math is correct, you come down to 26. So that's how many days of tara you're going to have. So now, without further ado, let's see the sugya. The Amar Ula, Amar Ablazar, Shilya Sheyotza Miktsasa Biyom Rishon Miktsasa Biyom Sheni. Part of the placenta was born and left her body on the first day, and the remainder on the second day, so we have a discrepancy of 1 day. Says Ula, in the name of Rabbi Lazar, that's the string of tradition that we're interested in, that Miktas Shilya, that part of a Shilya that was born, so to speak, on the first day, that is probably Rov. Whatever's inside, we assume it was Rov, and therefore there is such a thing as Leda. And if there's a Leda, then we're going to count 14 days of Yemei Tumah, Min Harishon, and the reason for that is those Yemei Tumah represent the Chumrah that maybe it was indeed a female, and therefore you need the counting of 2 weeks of Yemei Tumah. And we start that counting from the first day. Because again, the first day is the indication that that the shilya that went out miktsasa partially, that's considered a leida, and that happened on Yom Rishon. And even though the balance of the shilya went out on Yom Sheni, but we're going to start counting from Yom Rishon. So the Gemara asks, Omerle Abaye, Abaye turns to Ula and he says, Ma datoch? What is your logic that already on the first day she is Tmeya, and we have to kick off the 14 days of Yemei Tuma? It's L'chumra. You want to be Machmer and assume that maybe the baby, or let's assume the baby is female. Says Rav, L'chumra Diyasi Dekulu, you're playing with fire over here. Because once you're going to be Machmer and count the days of Tuma from the first day, which is the day of the miscarriage, to come in Taris law Mirishon, then you're going to be Mekil at the end. And you're going to start counting 14 days of Yemei Tumah from Yom Rishon. And on the 15th day, you'll start counting Yemei Tohar. And it doesn't make any sense, because we're not sure if there was a Leda here. You know, it's quite possible that most of the Vlad stayed inside the mother's body, and the real Leda, therefore, was on Yom Sheni. Therefore, we should extend the 14 days till the 15th day, calculating from Yom Sheni. And you're already telling me that she's calculating from Yom Rishon. Therefore, through this counting, you're going to start the Yemei Tara 1 day too early. El Amar Rava Lachush Choshesh, but Lo Mimne El Sheni. In other words, as far as any sort of chumrah, if she touched taras, all that we have to assume from Yom Rishon l'chumrah, she's metame because she had a leida through the miktsas shulya that came out on Yom Rishon. However, as far as minyan is concerned, to start counting, the counting should start from Yom Sheni, so that already on the 16th day, but not beforehand, she starts counting Yemei HaTara. Any dam she sees is dam toar. But we have to start counting from the second day in order to achieve the 16th day. Because if you're going to start counting from the first day, and that was just a chumrah as far as Yemei Tumah is concerned, you're going to end up starting the Yemei Tara 1 day too early. The Gemara asks, "My kamash malon?" In other words, what did Ula come to teach me when he said that mitzad sofik lechumra, we have to be mitami all the taras from the first day? And the Gemara says that Ula is coming to be mechadish a major chiddush, and that is the ein mitzvah shulya below vlad. That if only part of the placenta came out, and it has inside of the vlad, it could very well possibly be that most of the vlad is still inside. It hasn't come out yet. Nevertheless, Ula is telling us that ein mikzas shulya below vlad, that once the mikzas shulya goes out, we have to assume that it's carrying with it rov of the shulya. If not for the fact that you assume that most of the Vlad went out with the Shulya on the first day, if you don't accept that principle of Ein Miktas Shulya below Vlad means Rova Vlad, if you want to assume the other way or not, then maybe Rova Vlad came out on the second day, then, you know what? We wouldn't have to be Choshish for Tum Vitar on Yom Rishon. Because now you have a double Chumrah. You're assuming, number one, that inside the shilya there was a vlad. In other words, this is the double chumra that you have over here. And if we would have assumed that yesh mikzah shilya below vlad, then we'd have two two svekas here, and it would be like a svek sveka to go ahead and establish that she's mitame everyone from all the taras from the first day, because you're going to have to say that that there was a vlad in the shulian, that there was rova, the vlad was there. I mean, all this would make no sense if you say yesh mitzvah shulia below vlad, because then we don't even know if there is a vlad, and certainly we don't even know that the vlad was a rov. So if you hold yesh mitzvah shulia below vlad, then there's no reason to be machmer on the first day. The kamashmal on here of ula to be machadish to us that yesh, that ain mitzvah shulia below vlad. And therefore, if on the first day mitzvah shulia went out, we have to assume that inside the shulia there is a vlad. And not only that, we're going to assume that it's a rov, and therefore we have to be metameha from day one. The Gemara is not happy with this. If Ula's, the thrust of Ula's Chiddush here is to teach me that ein mikta shuli below vlad, tanina. We already have this in a Mishnah in Chul and Daf Ayin Zayin, and we're talking about a case where you shechted the mother and there was a fetus inside the mother's womb. Is shulia sheyotza miktsasa asura asur b'achila. If a part of the shulia of the placenta went out from this animal before the animal was shechted, it means the shechita can't help for part of the animal. Is not only that, you can't eat the shulia at all, even that part which was left inside, because the shulia itself is a simon vlad beisha, and not only that, but simon vlad bebehema. In other words, from the fact there's a shulia that we assume that there's a vlad, and if there's a vlad, then that vlad was already nolad, such that the shechita of the mother doesn't carry it's not relevant to the vlad. And that's true again if we apply that in the case of behema, to establish that ein shulia below vlad, because ein mixes shulia below vlad. If you would take the exact opposite position, that mixas shulia it could be below vlad, then why do we have to aser the entire shulia? You know, I understand that you could say that the part of the shulia that left is no longer subject to the heter of shechita of the mother. But why are you prohibiting the entire shulia, even the part that was waiting another day to come out? That should be nitar al yidei shechita sa'em. That the answer must be that there's a new halacha here, in this, you know, that underlies a new premise, that underlies this mission, and that's what Ula was repeating, namely that ein miktsas shulia below vlad, that we view it as if the entire vlad was in that shulia that came out, and therefore the shechita sa'em is not going to help for the shulia. And that's what it means when it says in the Mishnah in Chulin, asura be'achila. Says the Gemara, what did Ula want to teach us? If we only had the Mishnah Hava Aminon here, we're turning to you to Aleph Amid Beis. Diyesh Miktas Shulya below Vlad, which means that according to the strict din, I would say that Al Pidin Doraisa, only that part of the Shulya that went out is Asur Bachila. But on the other hand, that part of the shulia that remains within the body, that has a heta shechita, because we're not assuming that there was already a leda. We're holding now yesh mikta shulia below vlad. And you'll ask me then, why can't I eat the part of the shulia that was left inside and the animal, the mother animal, was shechted? The answer is gzeira miktas atu kula. You might have postulated that if we don't impose an iser on the half that came out, the half that came out after the shechita, the half that stayed in, then you know what? Tomorrow he's going to assume that even the half that went out is mutter. So we have to make a gzeira here from Miktsas Otu Kula. Now, somebody might think that a shulya, even if it's a full-fledged shulya that came out, if it went back into the mother's body, it would be niteres al yidei shchitas imo. So the chiddush here is that b'yitzias miktsas shulya, we assume that is a leda, such that the shchita doesn't work at all. And we're talking about a doraisa here. We're not talking about a gzera. That's when we asa the other part of the shulya that was delayed, that postponed its exit from the mother's body. We're saying that there's no heter shchita on that half. Not just that we're going to make a gzera for tomorrow, but the heter shchita doesn't apply in this case. And that's the komashman of ula of ein miktsas shulya below vlad, that the iser that prohibits you from eating any part of the shulya when yotza miktsas is not a gzera, but rather we're talking about at least a suffik iser doraisa. And that goes back to the case of that we're talking about as far as tumah vitara is concerned, that if a woman gives birth on two consecutive days, on the first day there was miktsas shulya, and the second there was the rest, the balance of the shulya, then already on the first day she is tmeya mitzat sofek, because we might actually assume that with this yitzias shulya most of the vlad went out, and therefore she had a leda, and therefore she's tmeya. And that's exactly what's going to be a suffix d'oraisa. If it was only a gzera d'rabbanon, then we wouldn't necessarily apply that gzera here. The Omar Ulam Rabbi Loz, another statement of the same tradition, Bechar shenitraf b'tzok shloshim yom. In other words, if a woman gives birth to the firstborn, and that firstborn has a mitzvah pidgin ben, but that firstborn unfortunately didn't make it till day 30, and it died before day 30. Is ein podin, so there's no mitzvah pidgin ben. As we don't go by the leda, we assume that the chiyuv pidgin ben emerges with the 30th day. The chen tani Rami Bar Chama had this in a brisa, mitoch shenemar ach. Podo, Sifteh, Esbachar Adin is a double language in the mitzvah. Pidgin Aben Podo, Sifteh. What is this double language coming to teach us? Yachol, I might have thought, Afilu Nitraf, Betok Shloshim Yom, that even if the baby died within 30 days, nevertheless, there is a Chiyuv Pidgin Aben that's engendered by the birth of the Bechar, Talmud Lomar Ach. But the Torah adds ach, and ach is always a mute. Chilek. Ach chilek means that ach podosifta means there's not always going to be a chiyuv of pidgin aben. And in certain cases, the father is alleviated from his obligation to be podis son. And what case is that referring to? It says in this price of Rami Bar Chama, it's a case of Nitraf B'toch Shloshim Yom. Which means that in this case, since the son did not live, unfortunately, to the age of 30 days, therefore there's no Mitzvah Pidgin HaBen. The Mitzvah Pidgin HaBen emerges with the 30th day. The Omar Ula Amra Belazar, another statement of Ula in the name of Rabbi Loza, Behema Gasa. How do you make a kinyan on a Behema Gasa? Do you require Meshicha? Or is it enough to do a lower echelon kinyan like Mesira, where the Bailam just give over the reins to the buyer? And Ula records in the name of Rabbi Loza that you're not limited to Meshicha, to Mesira. You can even use Meshicha. That means when you drag the animal out of the Rishus of the Mocher. So the Gemara asks, now we have a Mishnah in Kiddushin b'Mesira, that even Mesira will be sufficient and be effective on a behema gasa, and there's no point of, you don't have to limit it to meshicha. Even mesira is good. So the Gemara answers that Rabbi Elazar, who says that you need meshicha, who the Omer ki haitana, he maintains like the Tana of the following brisa. The sanya we learned, v'chachomim omrim zo v'zo, knows whether it's a smaller animal called a daka or a larger animal called a gasa, is b'meshicha. You can acquire ownership through meshicha. No mention here of mesira. I mean, if the brisa wanted to tell me a more far-reaching chiddush, should have told me that even mesira would be good enough. No, meshicha and only meshicha is good enough. And that would support the opinion of Rabbi Lazar, who says, Mechshicha. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Zo v'zo behagba. That neither Meshicha nor Mesira will be effective in this particular case of a Behemagasa, but what you'll need rather is Markid Islay, whether it's Meshicha, Mesira. But Rav Shimon Omer, Zo v'zo behagbah, to the exclude of Meshicha Mesira, the Chachamim accept Meshicha, not Mesira, and that's the end of that sugya. V'yomar Ulam Rav Loz, another string, Ha'achim Shecholku, Mashal Leim, Shomin, U'mashal B'neim B'noseim, Ein Shomin. The question is, what has to be included in the division of the estate? Obviously, all the valuables, all the monies, all the lands have to be included and divvied up amongst the achim, amongst the brothers, with one exception, the clothes that they're wearing on their body. That doesn't require a shuma. I'm sorry. That requires a shuma, but the clothing that are being worn by the next generation, you know, the cousins, is ein shamin. Why? Because shamin, to take someone's clothes that he's wearing and evaluate them in order to divide them up, that's already a bizu. Pelsis embellishes this a little bit for more, and he says that there's a mutual reciprocal mechila here amongst the banim. You know, one brother says, okay, I'm mochel you. Maybe your garments are more valuable than mine, but you know what? Even if it's not shavah b'shavah, I don't want to embarrass anyone. You continue with your clothing, and that's fine. That's only as far as the first generation. Then there's an assumed mechila. But he says, mashal b'neihem uvenoseihem. We're no longer talking about the direct heirs, but the next generation, their children, the grandchildren of the Niftar, is Ein Shamin. Ah. So in other words, this Mechila that we spoke about before only takes effect with regard to the next generation, the children, the clothing they're wearing. And Tosus explains, Rashi explains, that to bring these young children into Beis Din, you know, that would be a traumatic experience for them, so to speak. That would be a bizui. So then there's a built-in mechila. But as far as the achim, the first generation, the actual heirs, who are wearing begadim, then enochinam, we have to make an evaluation of the begadim as well. Omar Av Papa, Pa'amim af masha aleim ein shomin. There are situations where there is a mechila even aleim. Forget about bneim, meaning on the first generation they're all mochel each other. Mishkaches lei begadol ache. Gadol ache means the representative of all the achim. Because again, there are a lot of monetary dealings that have to be addressed after the death of the father. And what's generally the case is that there's something called Gadol Achei. He is the one who is best adept at dealing with possessions of buying and selling. And in this case, he may be wearing a fancy suit that's worth much more than what the other Achim are wearing, but nevertheless, they are all mochel him, his rights to maintain and retain ownership over this fancy suit, the nichalahu, because it's good for the Achim in general that this person, this one particular relative who is representing them, should look really spiffy, should really look very, very presentable. Dilishtamun mile, because people listen to someone when they talk if they're wearing a $500 suit. So in order that people should accept the recommendations or whatever this particular Ach advocates, there's got to be a sort of an awe or respect that's generated, and that comes from his malbush. So on that there's mechila. We used to say that on shoes there's a mechila, because who's going to fit into someone else's shoes? Has to be a specific size. The Amar Ula Amar Abulazar Shomer Shemasar L'Shomer. In other words, the first Shomer gave it to a second Shomer, and he didn't get the okay from the Mafkid. And guess what? The object was lost. Is Potter. The first Shomer is Potter. The second Shomer is now on the chopping board. The Lomi boy, I don't have to tell you that the Shomer himself, the first Shomer, the original, is completely off the firing line in the case of Shomer Chinim Shemosel Shomer Socha de Luye Alyo Lishmira. So certainly it's upgraded. It goes without saying, says Rabbi Loza, that if the Shomer gave it over was a Shomer Chinim, now by giving it over to a Shomer Socha, he jacks up the level of Shmira that's being provided in this case by the second Shomer, who is the Shomer Sachar. He says, no, Elafilu Shomer Sachar, Shemasel Shomer Chinam. Even if a person is being paid for a Shmira, and he calls upon his friend who's not being paid, the Hashta Grue Gari L'Shmira, so went from the Shmira Me'ula of a Shomer Sachar down to the Shmira Pechus of a Shomer Chinam, Nami Potter. Why? Sharei Masar Leben Das. You as a Shomer don't have an absolute chiyuv to maintain that whichever Shomer down the line you give him full responsibility, but it doesn't mean that he's got to have the highest level of Shmir that you have. All you have to do is guarantee that there's a Ben Das as opposed to Cheri Shotev Akot. And you could rest assured and sleep well in your bed at night knowing that this Shomer Chinam is going to provide the necessary Shmira. Rava Amar, Rava says just the exact opposite. Shomer Shemasel Shomer Chayav. It's considered Pshia to give and pass on the Shmira to someone else. That's a breach of contract. And Lomi boy, I don't have to tell you, if the Shomer Sachar Shemosel Shomer Chinam, certainly he's chayiv in that case because he lowers the level to Grue Gari L'Shmirasa. That's certainly a Pshia. El Afilu, I have a Chiddush for you, says Rava. Shomer Chinam Shemosel Shomer Sachar, even though he's upgrading the level of Shmira, nevertheless, he's chayiv. And why is that? The Omer Lei, what is the Mafkid going to tell the Shomer? Where's the breach of contract? At Mehemnesli B'Shvua, hey, lo mehem li b'shvua. I trust your shvua. I don't trust his shvua. The Shomer Sheni cannot provide to me a nemonis of shvua. And therefore you have to pay. And it really comes out that Rava here is predicated on a sensational chiddush that built into the agreement of Shmira, and Kabbalah Shmira is the commitment to offer a shvua, if need be, if the object gets lost and it's no longer around. The chiyuv shvua is inherent, it's essential to the very Kabbalah Shmira. And once you give it over to someone else, you forfeited your ability to take the shvua. Again, I would be curious to know what Rava would say if the first shomer was really available on board when the object was destroyed, and he could testify with a Shvua Doraisa and a Kitas Chayfetz that there was no Pshi over here. That might be something different. Next we get another din. Omar Ulam Rablazar Hilchasa, we paskin Govim in Avodim, that when the Malva comes to the Lova to collect his Chov, and the Lova has no, he has no wherewithal to pay him, but he owns an Eved Kanani, the Malva could confiscate, in lieu of payment, or repayment for the loan, the Eved Kanani of the Lova. Omale Rav Nachman Leula, Amar Rabbi Lazar, is that really true? Afilu miyasmi? Let's assume that the Lova himself died. The Malva comes to collect his chov from the Yesomim. Is it possible that in this case as well, I mean, Ula was unqualified here also, he allows the Malva to collect from the Eved? Lachor, that's not so, because Eved Kanani has the same din, the same status as Karka. And therefore, just like there's a shibud on Karka, there's a shibud on Eved Knani. Oh, so if actually Rabbi Lozer maintains this view, that the rights of the Malva to collect from an Eved Knani apply even after the death of the Lova, then in effect, Rabbi Lozer is accepting an absolute analogy between an Eved and Karka. And that's a pretty revolutionary idea. To such an extent now that we're saying that the Malva could collect from the Yesomim. I mean, that needs a real Shibud, and it needs a Heft Shel Karka. So the Gemara says, lo, that's too radical of a position. Rabbi Lazar never meant to discuss, to address the case of Yesomim, but rather Minei. Only to collect from the Lova himself. The Eved Kanani has a din and a status of Metaltolin. And there's no Shibud on the Eved Kanani that would be passed on to anyone else, whether it's the Somim or the Lekuchos. And the rights of the Malva to collect the Eved Kanani of the Lova, that only exists as far as the Lova himself is concerned. If the Lova is alive and well, just like the Malva could collect from any Metaltolin that are in the possession of the Lova. Why is Eved Kanani any different? But once this Eved was transferred to someone else, whether it's because the Baal died and they went Birush to the Banim, or because the Eved was purchased, etc., etc., in such cases, Eved has a din of Metaltolin. There's no Shibud on the Eved. So Rav Nachman is very upset about this. He says, "Minei afilu miglima ad katfei." I didn't need Rabbi Lozer to tell me that you can collect the Eved Kanani from Minei, from the Bnei Chori, as we called it, of the Lova. I mean, he could collect anything from the Lova. So what was the Chiddush here, the Gevaldige new idea that Rabbi Lozer was presenting? Hocha b'mayaskin, on the Gemara says, Sha'aso apotiki. The question is whether the halach of apotiki, which we'll discuss now, would apply even to an Eved. What's an apotiki? The Lova turns to the Malva, and he says, you will collect the chov from this. And again, if the Malva accepts those conditions, that's called an apotiki. So in this case, the Lova said to the Malva, you will collect the chov from this Eved. Now the Lova went ahead, and he sold the Eved. Comes along Rabbi Lozer with the Gevaldige Chiddush, that the Malva has the wherewithal now to collect the Eved from the Lokeach. And this is a Gevaldige Chiddush, that you can turn an Eved into an Apotiki, in effect taking Metaltolin, or something that has the status of Metaltolin, and transforming it magically to Karka, to allow Lekicha, allow Gvia Sachov, in this case of the Eved Kanani, from Lekuchos. That, you know, that's an amazing Chiddush. That through the, via the medium of apotiki, the Eved Kanani gets a status, magically, of a piece of karak, and you can collect from a shubad. The Omar Rava, Kidarov of the Omar Rava, Asa Avdo Apotiki, Umacharo, if he made an Eved as an apotiki, designated him, and now he sold the Eved, this is all the Lov, of course. His Balchov, the Malva comes along, Gove Heimenu. He could actually confiscate this Eved from the Lokeach. And that's not luck that you could take an Eved and make him into an Apotiki. It's almost as if the Gemara is saying that an Eved, although he's metaltalin as far as Gvias Chovos, and you can only collect Bnei Chori, Minei of the Lova, but nevertheless there's a Miktas, there's a little bit of a, shall I say, a vestige of the status of an Eved, like a Karka, that allows Aso Potiki to make the Eved into an Apotiki. However, says Rav Shoro Apotiki Macharo, Ein Bal Chov Gove Heimenu. If he takes the shar, the loaf, and he says to the Malvi, you'll collect from this shar, and then he goes ahead and he sells the shar, no. In such a case, the Malva doesn't have recourse to collect the shar from the buyer. My timer? What's the reason for that? Ha Isle Kola, Ha Lesle Kola. In other words, the halacha of mishubadim and what object, what class lends itself to the chalos shibud, such that you can collect it from the lekuchos, that depends not on some abstract definitions. You know, you talk about a potaki, you talk about eved hukish lekarka, all that is irrelevant. What's relevant is to make the chefza into something that gives betichus, that gives security to the malva. And the Eved, if it was made as an apotiki, is like kola. Everybody knows about it. And if everybody knows, it's not going to be a big deal for the lokeach when the day comes to knock on the door of the lokeach. What I meant to say is for the malva to knock on the door of the lokeach and tell him, you know what? I need this Eved as collection for a chov that's outstanding chov that my lova can't pay up. But again, why was that shibud chal in such a way that the lekuchos have to fork over the eved to the bal chov? The answer is because ha islei kola. The word is out. In other words, everybody knows about the status of the eved as an apotiki. That becomes like public knowledge. And therefore the lokeach understands that when he buys this Eved, he is going to be responsible for the Piron Chov through the laws of Shibud. However, in the case of a Shar, if the Lova, singled out the Shar as an Apotiki, less late Kola, nobody knows about it, you can't hold therefore the Lokech responsible for the fact that he purchased a Shar from someone and it has a Shibud on it, that's not something that you can call a shibud and lekuchas have to pay up. They don't know about the apotagi, they don't know about the shar. It's milsa the lesle kola. We'll just learn a few lines on Yud Beis Amud Aleph. Lebosa de Nothak. After Abnachman went out, Amalu Ula turns to those who are sitting in front of him and he says, Hachi Amar Abelazo, Afilu Miyasmi. That you can collect avodim even from Yisomim. In other words, that the law of and the status of an Eved is identical to that of Karka. And just like in a case where Yisomim, after they divide up the estate of their father, and amongst the pieces in the estate is Karka, is the Balchov Shalavim Gova Osamehem. The Balva could actually collect from the Yisomim these Avonim. And that's a big chiddush. So Bli Neder will pick this up after Chag HaShavuos.